Okay, well, welcome everyone. I hope everyone had an uplifting Yom Kippur. We're all here, so far so good, and we find ourselves on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. That means 22A. A little bit of background, just to what we learned previously. So previously, what we learned was that depending on what day it is, you will lane a different amount of aliyos. So on a Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, we lane three. On Rosh Chodesh and Chol Hamoed, we lane four. On Yom Tov, we lane five. How much should we lane on Yom Kippur morning?
Seven.
Six. Yom Kippur is because, and then Shabbos is seven. So Yom Kippur, because the Yom Kippur, the death, you don't get a death penalty for violating it, but you get kares, divine excision, which is considered to be a tear down. So that just indicates that it's severe, but actually it's not as severe as violating Shabbos. So it's kind of funny how we conceptualize things sometimes. Shabbos, even though it happens more frequently, it actually, in a certain respect, carries a higher level of severity than Yom Kippur does. Anyway, what we last addressed was Rosh Chodesh laning, and also the laning that they would have during what's called the Ma'amados. Ma'amados war, there were 24 shifts of Kohanim, Levi'im, and Yisra'elim, and throughout the year, while the Kohanim, Levi'im were in the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, there would be a corresponding group of regular Yisraelim Jews who every day of the week of that shift, they would be laning. So on the first day, they would lane the part from Bereishis that talks about Yom Rishon, the first day of creation. Then they would lane the second day of creation. And the issue we dealt with was, is that there's a limited amount of real estate of psukim. You see, there needs to be a minimum of three psukim per aliyah. There needs to be a minimum of 10 psukim laned altogether. And the issue is that when we divvy things up, you don't wind up with three per every aliyah. Now, we gave two potential solutions. It's a dispute between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said, which is what we do, you'll see the Gemara actually paskins like him toward the, later on, we'll see that we are doleg. So we actually, the person who lanes the second aliyah, he repeats the last pasuk from the first aliyah and then reads two new psukim, so you get three. The other option was Shmuel, who says we're posig. We'll actually split a pasuk in half. Half of it, the former half, is part of the first aliyah, and the second half goes to the beginning of the second aliyah. Now, why is it that we have to be so concerned? Who are we worried about? In terms of, also we mentioned last time that it used to be that the guy who got the first aliyah made the opening bracha, and the guy who got the last aliyah made the concluding bracha. All the other olim in between did not make any brachos. But the issue was, we had a gezer mishum nichnasin v'yotzin. There are people who come late to shul, and there are people who leave shul early. They go to Kiddush Club. So what are our concerns? Our concerns is that if someone comes in late, we don't want it to appear, we don't want them to think that in the previous aliyah, they only laned two psukim. And likewise, someone who leaves early, we don't want them left with the impression that the next aliyah, they're only going to read less than three psukim. That's important to keep in mind. Admittedly, it's what there's a section in Gemara here I have to read over a bunch of times to wrap my head around. I'll do my best to explain it, but if you understand this idea of nichnasin v'yotzin, everything else will really come from that understanding. So one more time, worried about people who are nichnasin, people who come in late, because they'll think that they will be left with the impression that the previous aliyah had less than three psukim. I worry about people who are yotzim and leave early because they don't know what's going to be laid next. They may think that the next aliyah has also less than three psukim under certain circumstances. And we're going to try to mitigate that concern. Okay, so we find ourselves about a quarter way down Chaf Beis Ma'af, a quarter way down 22A. At the words, let's see. Rav Amar Doleg. Okay. So Rav Amar, so as we learned previously, Rav says that we repeat a pasuk in the second aliyah. Shmuel says we just split the pasuk in half, right? Like Shlomo HaMelech split the baby in half. So Rav Amar, so we want to understand, what's the rationale? Why would I prefer one over the other, repeating a pasuk or splitting a pasuk? So Rav Amar Doleg, my time Elomar Posek. So this one's pretty straightforward. Why does Rav not want to split up a pasuk? Kasavar kol psuka delo paske Moshe anon lo paskinale. Well, if Moshe Rabbeinu, if Moses did not want to split this pasuk, how do we have any right to split up psukim in that regard? So it's very intuitive why Rav did not want to split a pasuk. Ushmul Amar Paskinale. Now we're going to interrogate Shmuel's position where he says, you can't split a pasuk. If Amar Rabbi Hanania Kara. So Rabbi Hanania was a Baal Kore. He would teach Lani, he would teach Psukim to people. So Tsar Gadol Hayali Eitzel Rabbi Hanina Hagadol. I was chagrined by this psak that the great Rabbi Hanina Hagadol gave me. Lo hitterli lifsok elalitinoko shel beis rabban hol islami desuyin. He never let me recite a pasuk without reciting the entire pasuk unless I was teaching young children. Because you're teaching young children the basic building blocks of a pasuk, it's not always viable to say the entire pasuk. You got to teach the kid word by word. So you have to inevitably split up the pasuk. But what do we see from here though? We see from here that other than teaching children, you're never allowed to split up a pasuk. So then how could Shmuel suggest splitting up a pasuk during Kriyas HaTorah? So the answer is Hasam Taima Mai Mishum Delo Afshar, Hachanami Lo Afshar. So what Shmuel say is, look, what was the reason that he was allowed to split up Sukkim with teaching children? Because he had no other choice. There was no alternative. So too over here, Shmuel says, when you only have, let's say, I don't know, five Sukkim, and you need to have minimum three Sukkim per Ali, and you have two Aliyahs to fill up with five Sukkim, you got to split one of them. You don't have any choice in the matter. Well, we do have another choice in the matter. Shmuel Amar Posek, my time below Mardole. Why is Shmuel just say like Rav, that repeat a pasuk instead of splitting up a pasuk? So he says, and this brings in our topic from before that we need to know, Gezer mishum ha-nechnasin u-mishum ha-yotzin. He's concerned about the impression it's going to give, because the issue with Rav is that if you're repeating a pasuk, so the guy who comes in, who's nechnas, who comes in late, he's going to think that the previous aliyah only had two psukim. He doesn't realize that the first pasuk in the second aliyah is actually repeating the last pasuk from the first aliyah. So we're worried about nifnasin. So he says, rather split a pasuk. That way no one's left with the wrong impression. Now, just a quick side note. The Turi Evan points out that this isn't a foolproof solution either. Because someone walks in toward the end of the first aliyah, someone leaves toward the end of the first aliyah, or comes in early, or comes in late during the second aliyah, he may also think that, oh, I just walked in middle of the pasuk. He's going to think that the previous aliyah only read two. Or if he leaves before the end of the first aliyah, he won't realize that they're splitting that pasuk in half. He'll think that the next aliyah only has two pasukim. So the way that this mitigates the concern versus Rav, instead of repeating, splitting helps, is that if you come in between aliyos, you're going to realize that they split the pasuk in half. So that's the advantage to Shmuel over Rav.
Rabbi, I have a question, please.
Yes.
Aren't certain psukim repeated in the Torah? I know for sure in the Megillah that they are. But
I know where Hashem and Moshe Limor.
No, because that's, you know, each individual.
We count that as
by Amalek. Is there something that's repeated?
Right, because back in Dvarim, we have it in Dvarim, right? Yeah, I mean, this is going to have a lot of psukim are reconstituted in Sefer Dvarim. And that's why, you know, we darshan them, that what's the Torah coming to teach me that I don't know had it just been said in Shemos or in Vayikra. So
doesn't the reader repeat something, like he'll read something, the congregation will say it, and then he'll repeat it again?
Oh, you're thinking like on a public fast day.
Yeah.
Right. Or well,
some other places.
So the laner himself, like, I'm sorry, 1 second. The Balcore is not repeating. So let's say we get to the Yud Gimel Midos Harachamim. So we say Hashem Hashem Kel Rachamich Anun Erech Apayim. So he's actually not saying it twice. He's waiting for the congregation to say it, and then he lanes it. You know what happens also with Ka'elas, right? This is very relevant stuff. So you know when the Balakori gets to Ka'ela, so he'll like wait for everyone to chime in and do their choir, and then he'll lean in afterwards. Okay. Very good.
Really, can I ask another question?
Yes.
I'm sorry if maybe I missed something along the way, but why do we care about what impression somebody has?
Yes.
I mean, who cares?
If
somebody is not there the whole time, like, so what if they have a different impression?
Yes. So Toby asks a great question, which is, why do I care what the peanut gallery thinks?
Yeah.
Right? Why do I care? So, okay. So, you know, if you want to go to the Kiddush Club, that's your problem.
Right.
And this is, so I would say, and this is less about concern for the individuals who choose to leave davening early. I mean, the truth be told, though, people have legitimate reasons for coming late or leaving early. You know, let's say they're swapping, you know, to watch the kids. I mean, people have legitimate reasons and people have illegitimate reasons. Try to judge every individual down the cops to us on an individual level. But we know institutionally that people, you know, just leave. Okay. So anyway, it's about Birchas HaTorah. That's one of the big concerns, the dignity of the Torah. We don't want people walking away thinking that Kriyas HaTorah or Talmud Torah is not a serious idea. So like we learned last time, we don't want someone to walk away with the impression that the Torah doesn't deserve a bracha on it, or we don't take Birchas HaTorah seriously. As we learned last time, we referenced the Gemara in Brachos, which said one of the reasons that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, you know, we always talk about sinas pinam, right? Because that's an easy idea to get behind. You don't need to be a religious person to think that baseless hatred is a bad thing. You just need to be a decent human being. But we don't talk about the more, I guess we call exclusively Jewish reasons. Like Chazal say, because they were not careful about Birchas HaTorah. Now, the question Naran asks is, wait, is it that people neglected? They just ignored the imperative to make a Birchas HaTorah? So the answer Naran says is that no, people didn't take Birchas HaTorah seriously. They didn't think making a blessing in Torah was important because they didn't treat the Torah reading and the learning of Torah as something significant. So my theory, my suggestion rather, is that Chazal are very concerned for the dignity of Torah, even to the extent that people who are just casually going in and out, they want them to have a strong impression that even if these individuals don't take the reading of the Torah so seriously, they should know that it's objectively considered something that needs to be revered. So I think that's why Chazal is going out of their way. It's not for the dignity of those individuals, but it's that society at large should revere Torah, or at least know that it's something that society reveres.
Basically, it's Mara Sinai.
I can see
very good. It's like a Mara Sinai.
Yeah. I can see
why would we
repair
it any less?
And it's not one that you mentioned. You split a pasuk. Either half might not mean anything by itself or might convey a wrong meaning by itself.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very difficult. It requires more analysis to understand where Shmuel is coming from. I would imagine, you know, there are psukim which you can kind of take one clause and another clause and separate. Like, there's an intelligible point to split it down. But you're right, Zadie, which is, if you don't have the full pasuk, you're going to be missing some of the meaning. You know, I'm sure there's some like good ones we can think offhand. You know, it's almost like what's that thing where they teach you about commas? It's the IE grammar thing.
Punctuation.
Right. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? It's like depending where you put the comma, like I ate bread. Okay. Something I was taught in school. I don't remember it. Someone else have a point? Okay. So let's get back into the Gemara. So just to reorient ourselves. So again, this is going to be very important for knowing the next section. So I'll just repeat it one more time. So we're concerned for two categories of people. Nichnasin, people who come in late, who will have a bad impression that the previous aliyah had less than three psukim, and people who are yotz, people who leave early, who will have to guess that the next aliyah has less than three psukim. So here we go. Meisve. So we're going to have an issue here. Parsha shel shisha psukim korno sebishnayim. If you have, now, I just need to define this one more thing. When we say parsha here, we're used to thinking the term parsha means the weekly portion, the seven aliyos that we lay in shul on Shabbos. Here, parsha just means a topical section. It doesn't mean like what we call parsha colloquially, okay? It just means a topic. So, parsha shel shisha psukim korno sebishnayim. When you have one topic of six psukim, split into two aliyos. The first guy reads three, the second guy reads three. Very simple. V'shel chamisha psukim, if there's only five psukim to that topic, b'yachin, and it should all fall in one aliyah because there's no way to split it up that you have three and three. However, in the event, kara rishon shlosha, in the event that the first guy reads three psukim out of five, so then what is the second guy going to do? He only has two psukim left to that topic. So hasheni kore shnayim mi parsha zo ve'echa mi parsha acheres. The Tanakhama, the first meaning says, the second aliyah will wrap up the first two, and then he will add on one pasuk from the next topic right afterwards. Whereas v'yesh omren, the dissenting opinion, which actually we'll see soon is who we rule in accordance with, they say, no, once you start a new topic, you need to go three psukim into that topic. Shlosha lefisha ein maschilin beparsha pachos mishlosha psukim. So there are those who say that you have to start, you have to go three psukim into the next topic. So you'd read, let's say, the two remaining psukim from the previous topic, and then add in three more. Why? Because our concern is that if people come in for the next aliyah, and they see you're only one pasuk into the next topic, they're going to think that the previous aliyah only had one or two psukim to it. So therefore, you go three psukim into the next topic. Now, why do we bring this all in? Here's the question. Vim Isa, if this is all true, Laman Damar Dolei Nidlo, Laman Damar Posig Nivsok. But wait, why do I need to go three psukim into the next aliyah? If I have five psukim, I can either repeat a pasuk in the next aliyah, like Rav says, or I could split up a pasuk. That way I get three in the next aliyah. So why can't I use that recourse that we just learned? So the answer is, Shani Hasam to Efshir Bahachi. The difference is, in the case of this Brisa here, you're able to add on more psukim. What's mean you're able to add on more psukim? Well, in the case of, depending on how we understand, either the Mamados. So when they were laning, for the service in the Beis HaMikdash, when the Yisraelim were laning for that, for the Kohanim, they could only do psukim on Yom Rishon for psukim that talk about Yom Rishon in the Torah, and Yom Sheni, psukim that talk about Yom Sheni, the second day. They couldn't start the next topic. So they were working with a finite amount of psukim, and they had to figure out how to divvy it out. That's what Rav and Shmuel are talking about. That's why they have to come up with these creative solutions of repeating psukim or splitting psukim. Over here, when we're talking about laning on Monday or Thursday, there's no harm, no foul of going a few psukim further into it, because your goal is to read from Parshas Hazinu. So you know what? If we go a little further into Parshas Hazinu, it's still from the same topic, because our topic of the day is to talk about Parshas Hazinu. So there's no issue with going three psukim onto the next topic, because it's all part of the general topic of Hazinu anyway. But when you have a limited laning, they can only talk about one day in Bereishis, or you can only talk about the Rosh Chodesh laning, and you're limited on psukim, that's where we have to come up with the creative solutions of either repeating a pasuk or splitting a pasuk. Okay? All right. This next part is where I may lose my train of thought. So if you'll just bear with me, I'm going to try to get through this piece of Gemara, and I'll let you know where we pause for questions. Amar Rabbi Tanakh Amar Yeshua ben Levi. So halacha ki yesh omrim. The halacha is in accordance with the yesh omrim, who say you go three psukim into the next aliyah. That way, anyone who comes in for the next one knows that you at least read three psukim in the previous aliyah. Just like you can't, if you start a new topic, you have to go at least three psukim into that topic. So too, if you only have two psukim left to the topic, that's not going to fly either. You would need to make sure that you don't just end an aliyah with only two psukim left to go, because we're going to be worried about the people who leave. They don't stay for the next aliyah, and they're going to think you're only going to read two psukim the next aliyah, because they'll think that's where you're ending the topic. So therefore, you can't end an aliyah with only two psukim left to that topic. You also would need to find a solution around that. So the Gemara asks, Pshita, hashta uma iskalta to kamekel tanakama, machmiri yesh omrim. As you know, the tanakama is okay going one pasuk into the next aliyah, but the yesh omrim was the one who said we have to go at least three psukim into the next aliyah. Shiur to machmir tanakama lo koshki the machmiri yesh omrim. We know that even the tanakama says that you can't leave over two psukim from the previous topic. So certainly the kal v'chomer, the yesh omrim, were more machmir, would also say you can't leave over less than two psukim or less to the end of the topic, because we don't want to leave people again with the wrong impression that you're only going to lean to next time. So what's the chiddush? If the yesh omrim are machmir on one end and the tanakama is only makel, is only lenient on that end, so if the tanakama, when he is stringent, I would think the yesh omrim is also stringent as well. So ma v'tema, what would have I thought? Nichnasin shchichi yotzin lo shchichi demachi sefer Torah v'nafki. What would have been my havamina? What would have I have thought? I would have thought that it's normal for people to come late to davening, to Kriyas Torah, but once people are in, they're staying inside. Why? Because the halacha is, once a sefer Torah is put out, you're not supposed to leave. There's leniencies that when the Sefer Torah is, the aliyah is over, the Torah is covered, if you need to leave, you can leave. But generally speaking, we assume that people, once they're here to stay. Kamash Milan, as we can see, that's not the case. So the Gemara is very attuned to human nature. So therefore, we have to be worried on both ends. We have to be worried about those coming in late, about their impression about the previous aliyah, that indeed there was at least three psukim lane there. And we also have to be worried about those who are leaving early, that they shouldn't think that the next aliyah only has two psukim in there. Therefore, you're not allowed to leave over two psukim from a topic. Okay? And then finally, finish my train of thought here, Tanakama, now the other side. But Tanakama, Maishna Shiuri, Delo Mishum Yotzin, Iskulinami Xera Mishum Hanechnasin. Okay, so the question is, why is the Tanakama only concerned for one way and not the other? Why is the Tanakama only concerned with leaving two psukim left to go? He's only concerned about people leaving early. Why is he not concerned about the impression of people coming late? So the answer is Amre Manda Ayo Shuli Shail, because he assumes this is also a great assumption that people talk during shul, right? So he assumes that anyone who comes late, they're not going to think that the previous aliyah only had two psukim, because anyone who comes late, they'll be able to ask the guy next to them, like, hey, what's going on? Did the previous aliyah only have two psukim? So therefore, he's only worried about people who are leaving early. He's not worried about people who are coming late, because the latecomers can always ask the people who were there beforehand. Okay, that was the very complicated part. Was that right? Maybe it was easy for all you guys. I found it very, I found my head was spinning by the time I went back and forth on there. So if you're confused, I can't say you're in good company, but you're in the same company as I am. I had to go through this like five times just to get shot. You know, Zadie, looks like you're saying something.
Yeah. It would seem to me that if you come in late, you know you're late, and you know the laning's been going on, and you're not going to make any assumptions as to how many sukkim have already been laned.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. something's happening already.
Right. And I think a lot, I don't know if it's exactly what you're saying, Zay, but along those lines, it's kind of like a funny thing. It's like, halavai, we paid so much attention to laning that someone would like start thinking like, oh, if there's, you know, if we're only, you know, up to this, then there must be that the previous Aliyah, you know, since we're only, you know, one pasuk into this topic, must be the previous Aliyah only laid, you know, two pasukim or one pasuk. You know, the fact that someone's like making all these calculations is pretty impressive as it is, right? So, you know, I love the assumption that people are paying attention to begin with during laning.
And then I have a question. In the context of what you've said, I've sat through the third Aliyah, which is usually, if any Aliyah is long, it's the third, and it has a lot more than three. It could have more than 10.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. So yeah, the I think these are more specific cases. Again, you know, when you're talking about like, you know, the Rosh Chodesh case, but yeah, you're right, Zadie. The way we've scheduled all of our laning is placed, we don't run into these issues so much. That's true.
I take it your grandfather hasn't been called up for Kisisa.
Oh, fair enough.
He got called up for Kohen.
Yeah.
Kisisa is like 30 or 40 psukim, the first Aliyah.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. We'll have to give him an Aliyah when he comes in, or when you can mark that down. All right. Okay, so let's get a final psak
on following along on Kohen.
All right, let's get a final psak. Rava Reder Rava L'Rav Yosef Hilchas Amai Shalach Le Hilchas Adoli B'Msei Dolgan. So what do we finally paskin? Again, now we're going back to our original machlokas. When I have five psukim, do I repeat a pasuk or do I split a pasuk? Psak is we repeat a pasuk. And it's the guy who gets the middle aliyah, meaning the second aliyah, who repeats the pasuk. And if you look at Rosh Chodesh lading, indeed, that is what we do. It's whoever gets Levi, the Shani, the second aliyah, he repeats the pasuk from the previous aliyah. So there you go, right there, black and white in the Gemara. We don't always get a definitive psak in the Gemara. Sometimes we have to wait till later generations to fight it out. But here it's pretty clear. Okay. New topic. This one goes down much more smoother. Zeklav kol sheishavos ah. So here's the thing. Our Gemara is going to ask as follows. Our Mishnah mentioned Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha. It talked about Rosh Chodesh and Chol Moed. Does anyone know what our Mishnah left out?
Chanukah.
Okay, Chanukah. Okay, yes, the Mishnah doesn't mention Chanukah. That's fair.
Fast days.
Very good. That's that, but Hanukkah also, that's true. But yes, Paul, that's what I'm looking for is fast days. How many Aliyahs do we lean on a fast day? All right, or we're near the Gabe, he gives up. Okay, yes, Judd, three. So we lean three Aliyahs, but the Gemara is not quite sure at this point. The Gemara gives two, the Gemara is going to ask Ibailahu. Basically, there's merit to suggest four Aliyahs. There's merit to suggest three Aliyahs. Why? Let's take a look at the Gemara. Ibailahu, Tainas Sibor Bekama. How many Aliyahs do you lay on a public fast day? On the one hand, Rosh Chodesh Moed Ika Karba Musaf Arba, Avahacha Delega Karba Musaf Lo. So on the one hand, I would say that Rosh Chodesh and Chol Moed have a Karba Musaf. We daven a Musaf on those days because there was a Karba Musaf, a Musaf offering. So maybe that fourth Aliyah is because it's to commemorate, or it's an indication of the higher level of Kedusha due to the Karban Musaf. Odilma, maybe having a fourth Aliyah on those days has nothing to do with the Karban Musaf. Hachanami Ika Musaf Tvila. It's not about having the Karban Musaf, it's about having additional prayers. So it's true on a public fast day, we don't daven musaf, but we do have additional insertions. We do say anenu. We do have additional prayers that we say. So maybe it's not about the karba musaf, but it's about having additional prayers that elevates its status to a four aliyah Torah reading. So what we're going to have to do now is, since we could really hear the argument both ways, we can really understand both sides of the coin, we're going to have to look at some case law over here. We're going to have to look at some precedent and try to figure out what's been practiced previously. So Tashima, we're going to give two attempts tonight, and we'll have to pick up next week to get a resolution. So we're only going to give two attempts tonight. But as I said, both of them are going to be only attempts. Okay. Tashima. Barashi Chadashim Uchol Shamoit. So now the first attempt is going to try to figure it out based on a close reading of our Mishnah. It says, Barashi Chadashim Uchol Shamoit Korin Arba. It says in our Mishnah that only on Rosh Chodesh Uchol Moed you lean for. So I'm left to infer, Haba Tanit Sibur Gimel, since Tanit Sibur is not mentioned along with the other two things that you lean for on, that would seem to mean it doesn't make the cut. So you only lean three aliyos on a Tanit Sibur. However, Ema Reshav, B'Shem V'Chamishi B'Shavas Micha Korin Gimel, Haba Tanit Sibur Arba. But if you look at the beginning of our Mishnah, says only on Mondays, Thursdays, and on Mincha B'Shavas, you lean three aliyos. That would seem to, I would infer from there, that if it's not one of those days, I would lean at least four aliyos, such as on a tiny Tzibur. So, we're not going to come out with an indication one way or the other from our Mishnah. That was attempt number one. Attempt number two. Tashima. This one, we get a little bit of ping pong here. Derav igla bevel b'tayis tzibor. So kamkara b'sifra pasach berach chasim v'lo berach. So when Rav came to Bavel, he visited Bavel on a public fast day. When he got up to read from the Torah, he made an opening bracha, but not a closing bracha. And then another practice that he had, which we're not going to analyze now, but we just quote it. Nafal kule alma anfaihu v'rav lo nafal ape. Everyone fell on their faces in prostration, and Rav did not prostrate. So that latter clause is not relevant for our discussion, but the first part is michti. Rav Yisrael kara. So presumably Rav got the Yisrael aliyah because he was a Yisrael. So my time a chasam v'lo beirach. Why is that he didn't make a bracha when he finished leaning from the Torah? Lami shum to buy the mikrach mina masrei. Because as we said, back then, if you got the final aliyah, you made the closing bracha. So from the fact that Rav did not make the closing bracha, must mean that there was another aliyah coming up on a public fast day. So we see from here that it must be that we leaned four aliyahs on a public fast day, from the fact that Rav did not make a closing bracha, thus leaving space for a fourth aliyah on a public fast day. However, it's not such a clear-cut proof because it's possible that Rav could have gotten another aliyah. You see, nowadays, the Kohen aliyah always goes to a Kohen, but there's a bit of a machlokus whether the first aliyah, let's say you have a big Talmud Chacham, a big Torah scholar who's present, and he's a much bigger scholar than the Kohanim who are present. So the question is, do we give the first aliyah to the major Torah scholar before the Kohanim? So we paskin that categorically, we just give it to the Kohen, even if the Kohen is an Am Haaretz and the Yisrael is a big Talmud Chacham. However, that was not settled at that point. So, lo, Rabbi Kahani kara, Rav Huna kari b'kahani. Rav must have been given, maybe he was given the Kohen Aliyah. And the reason he didn't give a closing bracha was because, well, there was going to be two more Aliyahs afterwards. Just like Rav Huna, who was honored with the Kohen Aliyah, even though he wasn't a Kohen. So it's not there's no definitive proof that he necessarily got Shlishi, thus leaving the door open for the fourth Aliyah. However, would Rav really have been honored with Kohen? Bishlam Rafuna, Kari Bikahani, Dafila Rav Amir of Atsigani, Hashivdar, Israel, Mega Kafayule. So we know that Rav Huna, that all these other rabbis, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, or Kohanim, they were subservient, they bent the knee and swore fealty to him. But Kafayli Rav Huna, Ela Rav Ha'ika Shmuel Tekana Hava V'dor Alei. But Rav, as you know, we just had a Machlokis Rav and Shmuel earlier. Rav and Shmuel they argue with each other all the time. They're Bali Plukta, they're equals. So since Shmuel and Rav were always hanging out with each other, and Shmuel was a Kohen, presumably Shmuel got the first Aliyah, and Rav got the third Aliyah then. Now we have our proof again. So if Rav got the third Aliyah because he couldn't have gotten the Kohen Aliyah, must be the reason he didn't make a closing blessing is to leave the door open for a fourth Aliyah. So we see that there could be a fourth Aliyah on a fast day. However, it's possible that even Shmuel would have given the Kohen Aliyah to Rav, so we don't have a good proof. Shmuel Nami Mechav Hava Kaif Le Rav. Shmuel also gave due honor to Rav. Rav Uta Avile Kavod, Vichy Avile, Befanav, Shaloba Fana Lo Avile. However, Rav only selectively gave him Kavod in his presence, but not when he was not in his presence. The point being is that Rav did give some degree of honor to Shmuel. Shmuel gave some degree of honor to Rav. So it's not so clear. Hachinami. So it's possible he could have gotten the Kohen Aliyah. You know how else it's clear that he got that he could have got that he got the Kohen Aliyah. Hachinami Sarat Rabbi Kani Kara Di Sagadet Bisrael Kara Lefaneha My Time Abarich. Remember, he doesn't make a closing bracha, but he makes an opening bracha. Now, you might say, La'acher Takana. Maybe this was after the days of Takana when everybody makes an opening and closing bracha. But then, Ihachi La'acher Nami Levarit. But if so, then if this is post Takana, when not just the first guy and last guy make a bracha, but everybody makes an opening and closing bracha, then why would Rav only make an opening bracha and not also make a closing bracha? So Shani Hecha to Yosef Rav, the male Eili Mipek Lo Nafke. So Rav had an interesting community, which people would come into shul late, but at least like kind of like the Havmina we had earlier in the Gemara, people would come to shul late, but they wouldn't leave early. So therefore, it was important that everybody always made a bracha at the beginning of their personal aliyah, because that way if anyone comes in late, they shouldn't think that we don't make an opening bracha. But there's no need for him to make a concluding bracha except for the last guy, because once you do come in, you're going to stay the whole time, and you'll see eventually that there is a concluding bracha. What's the point of all this? The point of all this is that we don't have a clear proof that Rav indeed gets the Kohen Aliyah. That Rav gets the third Aliyah. It's very feasible that he could have gotten the Kohen Aliyah. So we don't see an indication that there was an Aliyah that follows the third Aliyah. And so we still don't have a resolution to determine one way or the other whether there's three Aliyos or four Aliyos on a public fast day. But not to worry, God willing, we will pick this up next time because it'll be Chol Moed next week. So no reason not to have Shir.
Can I ask a comment? Okay, go ahead.
So I raised Hanukkah. How did they extrapolate the number of Aliyot for Hanukkah lighting?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure how they figure out the whole Hanukkah thing. I'll look into that one. You're right, because what seems to be missing from this discussion is Hanukkah. I don't recall offhand. It's an excellent question. If you shoot me an email when you get a chance, I'll try to look that one up. But I'm sure it has a very obvious answer that I'm just not that I'm blanking out on.
Yeah. I'll remind you, Shabbos and Shul.
Okay, sure. Very good.
In the real world, everybody who comes to Shul with any degree of regularity knows there's an opening bracha and there's a closing bracha. If they come in the middle of laning, they'll know that they missed the opening bracha, and if they leave early, they know they're going to miss the closing bracha. That's the real world.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, Z, which is, you know what, these people just like, if they come in late, they don't know what goes on. So I think we have to understand that during the times of Chazal, these halachos were in formation. You know, we live in a day and age where for many years, this has been settled law, so to speak. And we, like, our liturgy doesn't really change that much. And we know how things are supposed to go, whether we come in late or early 1 week. I think Chazal, they were in the middle of instituting. We could see even ideas that we take for granted today. We see them that during times of the Gemara, they were being debated. They were being instituted. So I think the clear-cut nature of how davening is run today for us was not the same way back then, because Chazal were still in the middle of writing and proliferating and developing, especially, I mean, brachos in general, especially the text, is rabbinic in nature. The rabbis at some point in time had to make it up at certain times in Mishnah and Gemara. So that's why I think they were a little bit more sensitive to the impression they're leaving people with, because it wasn't as settled back then, because that's when its inception was. That's my general impression. But you're right. Nowadays, we don't have that concern, I think. So that's a good point. All right. Anything else? All right. Well, I'm almost on shift at 8 o'clock to be selling love and a estrogen here at the shul. So if anyone wants to come by and pick theirs up and say hi, I'll be here for the next hour and 15 minutes. Otherwise, wish everyone, God willing, well, good Shabbos. And if I don't see you before Sukkot, then have a good Yontif.
Shabbat shalom.
Take care, everyone.
Shabbat shalom, everybody.
All right. Thanks for bearing through a more technical, difficult Gemara, but more schar that way. We get more reward. Fum sarah agra. All right. Take care. Good night.